Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
We welcome you this evening.
It's Monday.
It is Monday.
I look forward to our time together. And this is going to be an exciting 2 hours, Mark.
We have a lot going on this
A lot happening.
Hours. Mm-hmm. And we want you all to join us here at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. We're about to talk with Delegate Pat McDonough, a Republican from District 7, represents parts of Baltimore and Harford counties. Dr. Kimberly Moffitt is going to be joining us here in a minute, who is an assistant professor of American Studies at UMBC, author of Blackberries and Redbones. And you can join us here at 410-319-8888. Anthony, let's welcome the delegate to our program.
Delegate McDonough, great to have you on board.
Thank you very much for having me.
You know, Delegate McDonough, I have to tell you, last Friday on my program, the Anthony McCarthy Show, you elicited a lot of response from my callers. So I want to just give you first the opportunity to explain what your concerns are when you made that comment and exactly what was said. I've read several different things.
Yeah.
What exactly did you say as you were raising this alarm about what may could happen in the city of Baltimore this summer?
Well, my concerns have been growing for a period of time. I have friends in law enforcement and I have other contacts, and I've been aware that this situation in Baltimore around the greater harbor area and quite frankly beyond of street gangs and violent mobs and things of this nature are really getting to the point where it's out of control and dangerous. And of course, we're familiar with some of the more well-known incidents like what occurred on St. Patrick's Day. And beyond that, and last year, July 4th, a man being stabbed and a young six-year-old child being shot. So to me, it was unacceptable. And my attitude is that either Baltimore is going to overcome crime or crime is going to overcome Baltimore and reach a point where economically and otherwise the city cannot sustain itself. So my wife and I, a couple of weeks ago, were down at the Inner Harbor at a charity event, and we were at the corner of Calvert and Light Street about 9 o'clock in the evening. It was actually a Wednesday. It wasn't a holiday or anything. And we witnessed about 100 youths battling it out right 50 feet from us. And I had to actually drive through a traffic light to avoid this because they were coming in our direction. There were no police there. It was nothing. It was pretty shocking. And when I put all these different things together in politics, if there's one thing that has bothered me over the years, it doesn't matter whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, is when there is a serious problem and nobody is doing what they need to do about it. They're virtually ignoring it or covering it up. And I've just came to the conclusion that the mayor of Baltimore and some of the other leaders were not addressing this issue. And, of course, the Baltimore Sun then published an article by Peter Herman that went into some detail about the chaos, disorganization, no real plan to address this problem. So I put out the news release, quite frankly, as the beginning of what I'm going to conduct as a public awareness campaign, including another news conference tomorrow. And I used the term black youth mobs terrorize Baltimore Harbor. Now, that captured a lot of people's attention. But my point is, you know, a lot of people have attacked, and the early controversy has been about the use of the term black. And that's not really the problem. I'm a big boy. I can take the fallout on that. But we got to move beyond that. We got to move on to addressing the problem. And I believe as things are moving forward, we are going to get beyond that. We have received over 500 emails, letters, and contacts from people all over Baltimore supporting our position. Gregory Kane did a column today in the Examiner that I think was quite accurate. The Baltimore Sun engaged in an ad hominem personal attack that had nothing to do with the issue, and the publisher has assured me that I will be able to address all those points, which I will in the future. So this situation has got to be fixed, and what I am calling for, and I'm not an expert, I don't have all the answers, but one of the things we need to do is impose and enforce an immediate curfew. The second thing we need to do is bring together a solutions summit with all people who want to contribute, whether they're clergy, business leaders from all communities, people who, and I do believe in this. I believe in two things. I mean, I believe in tough law enforcement, but I know that we need to provide these young people with something to do. You can't be putting a lot of money and time and energy into a Grand Prix and close recreation centers and close youth groups. And there are tens of thousands of young African-American kids in that city that have said no to drugs and yes to education, and we've got to protect them. And that's what I want to do, and that's where I want to take the debate.
Two things real quick, and then we can bring our guest, Dr. Moffitt, in. But I do want to ask you, do you regret just pointing out that you have concerns about black youth?
No, because I really didn't do that in my
yes,
comment.
Yes, you did.
Well,
you said that in
my
your
comment. No, I,
but Delegate McDonough, you said that just as
more,
you were explaining to us.
There was more commentary than that. You don't understand. There was more commentary than that. When the first reporter came to me, mm-hmm. Mike Dresser, all of the things I just said to you, I said to him. Mm-hmm. That was not reported. And Mike and others have been around a long time and know that, you know, when you're dealing with the press, this is what's going to happen, particularly if they have an agenda. That's all going to come out gradually. And I was pointing not to black youth in general. It was not a blanket indictment. I was referring specifically to the black youth mobs because I was reporting a crime scene. When mm-hmm. you report a crime scene, you must be accurate and complete. It wasn't racial profiling. It was criminal profiling.
Okay, I agree. And the other thing I would just point out with to you, my concern, and I have to tell you, I agree with everything you said. I just wish the way you explained it to that reporter after you sent your statement out was, I think those things about finding solutions, those things about finding alternatives for young people would have been part of that conversation.
Well, it was, Anthony, but the fact is he didn't write it. I can't tell reporters what to write, but the next day after that came out, I was on the Tom Marsh show for 3 hours because Tom had taken off, and I saw all of this clearly. Mm-hmm. It was all there on the record. It's on the tape.
Let me introduce Dr. Lee Moffitt before I raise any questions. Also up on the phones at 410-319-8888. Sean, Malik, and the others, hold on. We're going to come to your calls, get you into this program. Kimberly, welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. And I have to concur with Anthony that I agree with much of what the delegate has said. I just think it's problematic how he has chosen to say it. And when we characterize black youth mobs, the reality is in our society that does not end up indicting just particular individuals, it ends up indicting an entire race of people, and certainly an entire group of people, meaning the young people that he's making reference to. And so I guess the other point that really stands out to me in terms of what he has shared with us is there's a goal that we all have to want to reduce crime. I don't think anyone would take stance or issue against him on that particular point, but the way in which we go about doing so, I think, is very distinct from one another. Because what I hear when I hear about some of the solutions is more so surveilling black bodies and controlling them and containing them because they are seen in our society as villains, as criminals. I don't hear the sense of these are young people who might be misguided, misdirected, need some other outlets. And so clearly, in terms of what we see happening with crime in the city, in particular the Inner Harbor, there shouldn't be talks about increasing law enforcement. There should be in funds towards that. But in fact, I agree. We need to be talking about increasing funds toward rec centers, making sure that they aren't closed so that we do have places for our youth to be, instead of, again, this whole idea of easily subjecting our young youth or our youth to being the villains of Baltimore and out to get all of these individuals that are coming into our city as tourists, because I don't think that's what's going on. But it does make it very easy, Delegate, it does make it very easy to then rally support for the stance that you are taking if you utilize that. Because we could have easily said there's concern about youth mobs or there's concern about young people in the Inner Harbor that are making tourists feel uncomfortable, but that's not what we heard. What we heard is a very specific group of people, and by doing that, then we target that group of people to suggest that they are the only problems in reference to this particular issue.
Well, as I said, that was an opening of a what I call a public awareness campaign about not only the issue in Baltimore City and not only the issue related to these mobs. And they are mobs, and these are rowdy kids, and they are dangerous, and they are brutal. And you have to protect the victims, and you have to protect the public safety. When you're in a burning house, the first thing you do is get the people out to safety, and you put out the fire. But I agree with everything you're saying, because there is a huge, there is a tremendous and significant underemployment of taking care of young people. And I think where I'm going with this is I want to bring to the attention of everybody that, in my opinion, this mayor and this administration are not doing this. They are not addressing it. They are preoccupied with other priorities, and they are also covering this up. This has been going on for more than 2 years. Now, my next proposal, of course, is the summit. And the summit, I want you there. I want everybody there who has an idea and a solution. I wouldn't want it to be all one way, because there is an enforcement issue here, and it, well, it cannot be ignored.
So, Delegate, this is Mark Steiner, and I'm going to open the phones after this. I want folks to join us. There's a lot of people calling in, some who agree, some who disagree with you, and we'll get them on the air at 410-319-8888. But, you know, you keep saying over and over again, that's just the way you opened it, that you had more to say. But the way we open things is what people remember. And the way you open things, and when you talk about, you know, black youth mobs, that's what people hear. And that's what you're playing too. I mean, when I read the comments that people wrote to you in support of you, what you do is you bubble up all these racist attitudes that come out of parts of the white community with comments like that. When you people who wrote back to you and said things like, "We have been on a downward spiral among young blacks in our inner cities by encouraging a culture of violence, crime, and personal irresponsibility through government entitlements." Or people who write to you and say things like, "Most of the people who are challenging you are either offended African Americans or people who live in North Baltimore and like the symphony music." I mean, I can meet a dozen others.
But the problem there, Mark, is that we've received over 500.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Whole variety of responses.
But I've read over, I mean, I don't know how many, but dozens of these emails that your wife sent to us to say, "Look how these people are supporting my husband. He's really doing a great thing, and I, you know, you're lucky to have a woman like that in your corner." And we, as any of us who have spouses in our corners are lucky to have that. But what I'm saying is, when you make statements like that, you go to the heart of racism in America, and that's what you've done with this,
well,
with the responses you've gotten from people who support you.
And that's consistently, Delegate, what we often do in instances like this is that we continue to utilize brown and black bodies to be the target that makes it very easy to rile up a level of support. And that's why I think this has caused so much tension in other circles as well, is because we haven't, in fact, heard, again, a more general response about concern about violence in the Inner Harbor. We've heard specifically targeted comments towards black thugs, which is another term that was being used in some of the support letters that you have since received. And so, again, the focus is on these particular young people, which then allows so many supporters to release or feel comfortable to vent what they are already feeling about many of these issues, instead of really dealing with the issue, which is the concern about what our youth have access or not have access to in our society.
There's also more to it. I mean, I don't disagree with what you're saying, but people are living in fear. People are very scared, and I think it's legitimate fear and legitimate concern. And it's not only in the white community and tourists. It's in the black neighborhoods, and it's in among black youth who are, as I said, saying no to drugs and yes to education. And they far outnumber any of the black youth who are part of gangs or part of this mob thuggery. And the problem is, this is violence. You cannot tolerate young people on the streets of any part of this city or anywhere else that have malice and belligerence, and they want to commit violence against their fellow human beings, black or white, for whatever reason. The mayor of this city and the administration and the people who have the power are not addressing this issue. Now, if I've stirred the pot and people like us are beginning to talk about it, fine.
But why stir the pot at the expense of talking about race? That's the concern that I'm interested in. Why stir the pot when it then becomes about the black and brown bodies, instead of stirring the pot on the fact that there is, in fact, violence in the Inner Harbor?
Well, because you got to be accurate, Professor. The point is, you know, I could have said 300,000 or 300 Chinese mobs were down there. It's black youth. And the fact is, we can say black caucus, we can say black ministerial alliance, We can say a black scientist performed great things and is an astronaut who happens to be a friend of mine. And we can say these things and take pride in them. But we have to be accurate. These are 100% black youth in the mobs. I didn't say the black community. I didn't say black young people. I said the mobs.
And I doubt very seriously if anyone has witnessed 300 black youth converge on the harbor.
You're kidding.
And
no.
The second
well,
thing.
I'll tell you.
Delegate, I have been very quiet and listened. And
but
you
I
know,
say one
I understand.
Thing about
let
that.
Me just let me finish, well, and then you can.
Let me say very quickly.
Let me say very quickly, and then you can say what you need to say. I don't want
to
stop
well,
you.
All right, go right ahead. But that's a statement is totally erroneous.
Okay. I would like to see the videotape of 300 young black youth in the Inner Harbor.
Well, all you have to do is read Peter Herman's column
okay.
and the police dispatches where they mention the huge numbers.
They may have said huge numbers.
No,
you said 300.
They say the exact numbers.
Okay. The other thing is I would wonder how afraid, when we talk about how afraid people are in the city, police were trying to tell reporters that on St. Patrick's Day in Fells Point and in Canton, two very wonderful residential areas of our city, that they were mobbed by white college students.
Yes, and I mentioned that. And
you mentioned that after you released a statement indicting black young people.
Now, that event, I said on radio that you have knuckleheads in Canton and Fells Point urinating on the sidewalk, getting into fights among themselves, and causing chaos in that neighborhood. Not to the extent of going to use knives or attacking or assaulting innocent people
well,
that are not involved. There is
you know,
a difference between apples and oranges here, and it hasn't been occurring for 2 to 3 years either.
Let me get open the phones here. Let me just say for us to contemplate as well. I mean, using race, I think, a lot in terms of our descriptions can say a lot of things, Delegate. And I think that the reason I said that at first and is that you know, there was a professor at Hopkins who's African-American. Who's a dear friend, and he called up one day very upset because police had done nothing to help him when he and his wife were turning back home from Washington, D.C., going through downtown Baltimore, and they were attacked by a flash mob of white kids on bikes who destroyed his car, attacked him, attacked his wife. He had to fend them off. But the interesting thing about it, when he described that whole incident to me, he did not use the word white until I asked him who these kids were.
Well, let me say this, Mark, on that. If that white professor had had his
child... He's a black professor attacked by white kids.
A black professor, anybody. If he had had his child kidnapped and the FBI came to his home and said, listen, we just sent out an APB across the country describing the person who kidnapped your child as about 35 years of age, about 185 pounds, and, you know, we've sent that out. And the professor would say... Well, let me tell you, the guy was white. Why don't you say he was white? I want to get my child back. I want my child out of harm's way. Well, we don't want to do that because that's going to offend somebody. But his child's safety would then be in very serious jeopardy.
Let me, in all fairness, open the phones at 410-319-8888. Lots of people calling in. Let's get them into a conversation with our delegate and with Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, Delegate Pat McDonough, who is a Republican from District 7, representing parts of Baltimore and Harford counties. My Mondays here with Anthony McCarthy has... show at the exact same time every Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. And Dr. Kimberly Moffitt is Assistant Professor of American Studies at UMBC and author of Blackberries and Red Bones, Critical Articulations of Black Hair, Body Politics, and African Communities. And 410-319-8888, let's see. People have gone on and off the phone. Who's been waiting a long time? Let's go to Jennifer. You're on the air in Randallstown.
Hello.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. I wanted to say I'm a little disappointed at the angle of this conversation
okay.
because, you know, violent. I'm very concerned about safety of my family, and whether it's black or white or who's the majority or the minority, I think it does need to be addressed, and I do think that it should be pinpointed for specifically what it is, and I think that it's disappointing that this conversation is going more towards race than public safety, and I think that's the bigger issue.
So how would you take it there, Jennifer?
I'm sorry?
I said, how would you take it there?
Take it that this conversation is more about race than public safety?
Yeah. I mean, no. I'm saying I'm curious how you would posit the issue.
Maybe I'm not understanding or can hear you clearly. From what I've been listening to the whole conversation, when the topic of black youth or mob I felt his depiction was accurate. If you're going to talk about a mob and if there are majority black people involved, then I think that that should be addressed exactly the way he presented it. He used it as it was.
And I think that she makes a very good point. I really do. I think that, and I even agree with a lot of the points the delegate made. But, Mark, as you pointed out, it's how we open. It's if you're going to send a press release out and you're just talking about black youth mobs, and you don't talk about the other options, you don't talk about making alternatives available, you don't talk about let's have a solution summit, then I think that you are talking about race.
Absolutely. And that was, and I think that's the point that I started off with because, again, Anthony and I seem to be on the same page in terms of how we have interpreted the delegate's comments. And I have been very clear in saying that I'm disturbed that race had to be a part of the conversation because I do think this is more about violence in the Inner Harbor or any parts of the city and that should be the focal point.
So I think specifically addressing what I opened with, and I'm going to go beyond what's happening in the harbor. I'm going to go into the neighborhoods. I'm going to be talking in the future about the General Assembly and the role they have in all of this, and I'm going to be talking about the private community and business community and the role they have in all this. We're going to talk about that. But we were referring specifically to the harbor and what was happening. And, you know, if you're going to talk not about black youth mobs, then you're going to talk about the Titanic and not mention the iceberg. You're going to have to do the whole story, and you're going to do it accurately.
So the question I would have, Delegate, on the way back to the phones here, and Clarence, the next caller up, we have Hank's on the line, and the number of other people, 410-319-8888, is that then I've seen so many summits over my life, and most of them are, quite frankly, a waste of time because nothing comes out of them. People talk and feel good, and then they walk away. The question is, it has to do with power, and people do with the power that they have. So when you say that the mayor, and many people criticize the mayor here in Baltimore for the Grand Prix and other things, and she's being criticized for who she's chosen to run the Grand Prix and the rest at the moment, the question is then, what do you propose doing? Do you propose giving Baltimore City more money to open more parks and rec centers?
Yes.
Or you do?
Yes, I do. And I will tell you how.
And how are you going to do that?
Well, we all know, Mark, you and I both know the budgets are tough everywhere. We know that. But what I want to do is create a tax incentive for businesses and an incentive for nonprofits and build a Maryland Youth Advocacy Fund and try to raise $50 million and to distribute that in areas where it's needed. I don't want to substitute. I don't want government to hold back. I don't want the mayor to say we don't have the money, but we can do a Grand Prix and then take the money from the youth fund. I want it out there to be supplemental, and I want non-government people oversighting it and managing it. I want to see scholarships for young people who are disadvantaged that need to go to school and need some money. There are a multitude of things that can be done. We need creative people with ideas and solutions, regardless of liberal, conservative, regardless of Democrat, Republican. That's all got to be done. And I just think what bothers me about the mayor is she doesn't seem to have a creative bone in her body, nor does she appear to care about things. These things have been going on for years. This is not just a local phenomena.
Well, I mean, I want to come back to this idea you have because I'm not quite sure I've seen ideas like this really work anywhere else. Where we talk about money coming from private funds and foundation where they come from to build a $50 million pot of money.
Well, if anybody else has a better idea, and if summits didn't work in the past, we don't live in the past, we live in today, but I would like to see and I will introduce legislation that will provide a tax incentive to business owners, including small businesses in the city and otherwise, that want to introduce this money into this fund. They will get a tax incentive from the state of Maryland. Instead of taxing them into the Stone Age every year, maybe if we give them a break for doing a good thing, it might work.
So you're proposing, let me get this correct, maybe I understand what you're saying, Pat. What you're proposing is a bill to come for the next legislative session, not the special session in August, but I would imagine next January, where you're saying you would give a tax incentive, whatever that would be, what X amount of dollars that is, tax write-off, and that write-off, that money would go into a fund that would be used for rec centers, for scholarships, for education in the city of Baltimore.
Well, not only Baltimore, the entire state, because we have our problems in Baltimore County. We're not pristine out here.
No, you're not.
We have issues. Falston High School, which I represent, it's unbelievable. I know most people don't know it. It has a serious heroin problem. So there are so many things we can do. There are so many bright people that want to contribute and make a difference. I mean, we could go to Bill Gates and say, give us $10 million if the project's worthwhile, whatever. But I think the worst thing that political leaders do is to sit on their butt, quite frankly, excuse my French, and do nothing. In all the years I've been in elected office, and I don't care what party they're from, if there's one thing that annoys me, Mark, is that politicians sit on their butts a lot of times. They don't want to do anything because they are scared they will annoy people, like I've annoyed some people, and they are afraid, you know, to make a move. And that's very troubling.
Well, let me we have to take a break right now. I'll be taking a break, and we'll come back. So I do want to get right to the phones here, and I want to probe this a bit more, only because the direction going in is interesting, Pat, and I think that we can explore that in greater depth, and I would again raise questions, maybe from my side of the aisle, wondering whether or not $50 million can even put a dent in the problem you're talking about, because there are issues in Baltimore County, Harford County, in white communities and other communities in Maryland, all kinds of communities, and that $50 million would barely put a dent in Baltimore's issues. So let's figure out what that means. 410-319-8888. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And we are here with Delegate Pat McDonough, who represents the 7th District in Baltimore and Harford Counties. Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, who represents her students at the UMBC, where she's Assistant Professor of American Studies. Number is 410-319-8888. Before we jump into our conversation, I have to remind you all that WEAA broadcasts live from the island of Curacao, Labor Day weekend, during the Curacao North Sea Jazz Festival, featuring Jill Scott, Carlos Santana, India Irie, and more. Information at WEAA.org. Brought to you by the Curacao Tourist Board, Princess Beach Resort and Casino, and Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And speaking of the voice of the community, let's go to that voice at 410-319-8888. And Clarence, you're on the air.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Welcome.
I'm a cab driver. I work the Inner Harbor almost exclusively. Yes, you have a few black youth that come down there, a few that come and maybe have a disruptive behavior or are rowdy and everything. But the majority of the black people that I see come down there, whether it's 20, 30, or 15 or two black youth that come there, they just come down there to have a good time. They may get caught up and be profiled as part of what a few may do, but that's not what the majority of the black youth that I see every day on the weekends up and down Pratt Street, Lombard Street, Harbor East, and anywhere else you want to name down in the Inner Harbor. Now, I'll give you a classic example of racial profiling. Up and down York Road, when we transport the Loyola kids from Northern Parkway back down to the campus, there were about 30 or 40 black youths who were coming from a function one night, I happened to notice. Now, I'm coming back and forth up and down York Road maybe 20 times. They were just walking home from whatever function they were going to in a peaceful, they had a police escort, and these were kids. Now, but nobody says anything about the drunk college students who throw bottles, who tear up cabs, who just don't get caught up in that because they have so many cabs to transport their rowdy behavior off of York Road back to the campus of Loyola College. Now, in Canton, Harbor, Canton, or Fells, or Federal Hill, on Charles Street, Light Street, and down on Hanover Street, you can get just as many fights on cross streets in those areas by white individuals as you will see anywhere else. This person, this delegate, he He has no idea what's going on the ground level down there. He's just taking what somebody with whatever their framework, their point of view is, and just took it there. Ground level, ask the cab drivers. We know what goes on down on the Inner Harbor because we work there exclusively. Thank you, Mr. Steiner.
Thank you, Clarence. Delegate?
Well, obviously, I wish that were all true, and that's really what we would like to get to at that point. But the police reports and the stats that I've been privy to and that I've reviewed clearly indicates that is not the case.
When you say it's not the case, I see. Let me just throw this out to you, and Delegate, and I think that it's really something to kind of wrestle with and talk about. So I think that, look, there are cases where black kids have come down the Inner Harbor and fights have broken out. Definitely. And those things have happened.
Definitely. Absolutely.
And nobody denies they've happened. But to make it seem like they happen every day or every week or all the time, it's just unreal. I mean, I think that, you know, I'm in the city all the time at night. One time have I seen a kind of fight break out with kids on the street. And when it did happen, I called the police and said, there's a fight breaking out. You better get people over here to break up this fight because it's spilling out into the street. But that can happen anywhere. It happens in Fells Point, which is mostly an area of white college kids. What I'm saying is, I think, Pat, what you're doing in some ways is blowing up a situation that's not as large as it is. The situation is that kids in poor and working class communities here in Baltimore and in Wicomico County and in Washington County and Hagerstown and in Harford County, we're not funding education. We're not funding rec centers. We're not funding the places these kids need to have. And so they're in the streets or on the country roads, wherever it is that they live. I mean, that's the issue. And to kind of point fingers at, like, young black kids saying, here's the problem, because it really isn't. I mean, it happens.
Listen, I just have to, in the strongest terms,
go ahead,
disagree with you.
Go ahead.
I respect you, but the point is this. There are some people who have that strategy or that position. It's not true.
It's
not even close. The problem is prominent. It is dangerous. It is brutal. It is not every day in large numbers, but there are incidents occurring constantly every day in the greater Baltimore Harbor area. There are large mobs of kids down there. The police stats reflect it. The privy information I have reflects it. The information I've received from individuals, business owners at the harbor, people near the harbor, it is just not the case. Now, fine, if that's what you want to believe and if that's what others want to believe and they want to accept that is the atmosphere, that is the environment, it will continue as we are and we really don't have a problem, I can't change your mind. You believe what you believe, but I'm telling you, it's not what I believe. It's not what an overwhelming majority believe. It is not a reflection of the statistics and the facts. And if we believe what you are advocating, then we will sit on our butts like the mayor and do nothing about it, and there will be more victims and more murders and more dangerous things happening to people. And I can tell you, regardless of whether you believe it or not,
yeah,
the people of Baltimore do not believe it, and the people of the greater Baltimore area do not
believe it. But again, and then we'll go back to the phone, too, and I want Kimberly to come back in. But the stats themselves, I mean, I have dozens of shows on crime all the time in our communities. That kind of assault and violence and murder have gone down in Baltimore, not up.
We're talking about street crime. We're talking about hit and runs. We are talking about assaults that go unreported constantly. The street crime nature of what I'm talking about is unique. It doesn't fall into the rapes. It doesn't fall into the burglary.
Well, see, and with all due respect, I mean, you know, a lot of people who live out in the suburbs think that they know what's going on in Baltimore with crime, but don't.
Well, they may not, but I do, because I make it my business as a member of the General Assembly who has access and contacts to information from the gold shields down to the guys and girls walking on the
right.
street.
And it's all
I
anecdotal.
Know what's going on.
And I think also what's interesting is I'm curious how we come up with the term mob. Like, at what point do the black youth in groups become a mob? Are they a mob once they have committed an act? Are they a mob simply by being a group of young people walking along the Inner Harbor together? And one of the points that I think that comes up consistently in my research is we have a tendency, just based on how we have learned to read the black body, especially the black male body, we have a tendency immediately, based on pop culture images, to villainize, to see them as threat, to see them as criminals that are rendering harm on the innocent. And so by virtue of seeing, 10 to 15 young black boys walking along the harbor, I wonder if at that moment, for those who are looking upon those bodies, if they immediately become a mob, or are they a mob because they have then witnessed them participating in an act?
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with young black people or white people or anybody else congregating in groups or demonstrating or doing whatever they want to do under the Constitution and freedom of speech and assembly. But the point is this: I did not create the designation mobs. The police department, other reporters, and other commentators created the designation mob. In Philadelphia, Mayor Nutter used the term mob, and black roving mobs, used all of that after 2 years of a similar cover-up type atmosphere in Philadelphia. The black ministers and leaders of Philadelphia came to Nutter and said, enough is enough. We've got what we've got here. Let's designate it. Let's do something about it. Same thing happened in Wilmington, Delaware, and it's happening around the country. This is not just unique to Baltimore.
Let me open the phones. 410-319-8888 is the number here, and let's see. Try to get some folks who haven't called in a while. Charles, you're on the air.
Yeah, I want to say people don't understand the youth, the struggle that we go through when it comes to not knowing when you're going to eat, things like that. There's so many different problems that the youth go through. Is no jobs out here. That's what really need to be out here.
Absolutely.
They talk about youth centers. Need to be jobs.
Yes.
That's what we need, like more summer jobs, because it's more to this earth. Forget the earth. It's more to these streets than thinking that kids is out here just doing that just to be doing that, watching TV, because that's what people think. It's not like that, man. Really not like that.
I agree with this gentleman completely. A part of that component that I think
with
the solution has got to be job creation. It's got to be job development. Mark, I don't know if you remember that during previous administrations, there used to be a lot of summer job programs, and there used to be a lot of programs that did employ youth, whether it was in the city or other places, and that has to be part of it. It has to be a holistic approach, and I know a lot of people want that holistic approach, and there are a lot of bright and good people out there who can make it happen as leaders, but I'm not going to ignore the crime public safety part of the component. You can't have one without the other. Now, we can both sit in a room with 100 bright people who want to contribute money and argue and debate about it, but let us find programs and policies on both ends of the spectrum that work and produce results.
Well, let me go back to the phones. I'll hold my comment for a moment. Here's some other listeners calling in. 410-319-8888. We're here with Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, Assistant Professor of American Studies at UMBC, author of the book Blackberries and Redbones, my dear friend and partner Anthony McCarthy in the studio with me. On the phone, Delegate Pat McDonough, Republican from District 7, who represents Baltimore and Harford counties. 410-319-8888 is the number. And Jay in Middle River, you're on the air.
Hey, good evening, everybody.
Hi, Jay.
I think there's a couple points to debate. One, I mean, there's still a great many people coming to the harbor, black and white. So if the attacks were as bad as you say, I think the throngs would be a lot less in depth at the harbor. So, you know, it's one thing to be in fear, and it's another thing to be real. And the reality of it is, it's not enough to dissuade people from coming to the harbor. The second point is, and I heard the delegate's point about creating a fund to try to divert resources back to communities that need them. I think the fallacy in that is you have to make a situation where it's going directly to the youth that you say your point of remarks are the ones committing these issues. It's one thing
to
create a fund and make it available to everyone, and then say, "Oh well, how do the resources get back to the people that need them?" Are you ready to commit to say we've identified specific civic organizations, whether they be religious, whether they be Greek fraternities and sororities, whether they be youth centers, and say, "You guys help us out." Here's the money. Let's get it done.
Yeah. Well, I think that's absolutely true. I think we need to go around the government. I'll give an example. On St. Patrick's Day, when that terrible event was occurring in front of the Mitchell Courthouse, I was sponsoring a charitable event for the Boys and Girls Club of Harford County, which is now close to being broke and is a tremendous successful organization all across the country, and for the PGM Foundation, which is managed and led by African-American men, and I was trying to raise money for both groups. And yes, you've got to go directly into the greatest impact areas where it makes a difference. Government is lousy at doing that kind of stuff.
So let me just raise that for a minute, then we'll come back to the phones. I really want Kimberly to jump back in here. That when we say that, this is where you and I know, Pat, we're going to disagree, but I just want to throw it out there to you, is that see, I don't think you can charity your way out of this or nonprofit your way out of this or non-governmentally work your way out of this. I mean, what builds institutions are government funds that take care of kids. They take care of families.
Well, they're still available, Mark.
No. What I'm saying is you're not going to be able to raise all your money for these other entities to take care of the issues that these kids and that we're facing. I mean, I know you want to – you seem to think the police are the more important part of it. I think that if you had more places for youth to go, you'd have less worry about crime. But on the other hand, let's just take a bill that never went anywhere in the state legislature this year that people from Baltimore put in, but it was sent to another commission to study because legislators love to study things. And that is that they wanted a $1.2 billion to take the money that we could leverage in Baltimore from the money, $60 million Baltimore puts in and the money the state puts in to have a $1.2 billion come in to rebuild the schools immediately. Now, that could put hundreds of adults, thousands of adults, to work to take care of families that also take care of children. But we don't do that.
Well, the money was not available.
It was available. What are you talking about?
The money was not available.
The money was available.
You would have to raise taxes.
No.
Even more.
That's not true. This particular bond was based just on the combination of the money that the state puts into the city schools for construction and the money the cities put in.
I understand the point, and I know what you're saying.
It wasn't extra money.
But the debt affordability at the state level at this point cannot afford that level of debt without going over what is allowable and without changing money being transferred out of the tax part of the budget in order to cover that debt that's being incurred by that proposal. That was why it lacked support.
But
I can give you another example in the legislature that talked about $20 million that, in my opinion, and I would have voted for it, to go to Baltimore City. They passed a bill to create a college university within the prison system for rapists and murderers. Yes, they were included. They would get early time release if they attended this free college, and it's going to cost about $20 million. I think if you're going to talk about priorities, you don't provide college education and early release for people at that level, at least. That money should have gone into programs in Baltimore City.
But those are the kids, those are the people who are coming back to Baltimore City and back to the rest of the state with no training and no education and go back to a life of crime. If they had a college degree, you know, like all the men I worked with in prison, none of them went back to jail. They all got their college degrees or an AA degree.
I doubt if the murderers are going to make that much of a contribution, and there's 3,047 of them in the prison, and we did manage to pass a overwhelming amendment to block them. The rapists are still getting it. We do have people in college that can be, I'm sorry, in prison that can be saved and can be trained. And in fact, in our prison system, we spend $20 million a year now for existing training programs, and the demand to go to those programs are very high, and they are being accommodated. But to spend an additional $20 million to provide a college when our people, both black and white, working people, can't afford to get their children into college because of the cost, and to give a free education and early release, to me, philosophically, I'm sorry, I can't go there.
Well, you tell that to the Charles Duttons of the world who have made, and many other men and women who have come out of jail.
I can give you a lot of other examples that go
right
where Charles Dutton didn't go.
And I bet you that my examples would end up winning. Well, we'll see. We'll do that one day, Pat. We'll go line up with that.
What's
410-319-8888.
I want you to – I don't know why you invited me here today. You should have invited me when you're going to that island. And I could come there personally.
I'm not going. But if you want to be my date, we can go together maybe.
Uh-oh.
I'm just kidding.
That's another topic.
I don't think my wife would approve.
And neither would mine. So
that's
410-319-8888 is the number here. Kimberly, before we go back to phones.
Yeah, I just, I can't say a number of times that I agree with much of what the delegate is raising. I just think, once again, that we're in a position where we are attempting to surveil black bodies, to say that we need to contain them in particular ways because we see them or perceive them as mobs. I mean, I think about, you know, a colleague of mine who on a monthly basis hangs out with about 9 of his colleagues, all of which are black male PhDs that hang out at the power plant once a month playing bowling. And I imagine in terms of how people respond or react to these black bodies along that part of the city that are all over 6 foot, all over 200 pounds, how people visualize those bodies and how they react to them, even though they may not be carrying out an act that is mob-like, by virtue of how we have internalized and visualized black bodies and what they represent in our society, especially when it's a black man, that there is a particular reaction that we have to it. I even, Delegate, make reference to a very specific quote that you have made or been quoted as making in a recent Baltimore Sun article where you talk about you and your wife being along the harbor. And I think the direct quote says something about 100 people were about 50 feet away from us and our auto was being surrounded. And I'm thinking to myself,
no, they were moving in our direction.
50 feet, 100 people on a Wednesday night, all of that just raises particular questions to me. And I'm just wondering how immediately we see that as a threat.
They were fighting one another. And there, I mean, not all of them, but there were at least 20 of them battling it out. This was a violent thing. You know, if it's 50 people coming across the street and they're walking across the street, I'm not concerned about that. I live in a working-class integrated neighborhood, and we do have crime issues, both black and white. My neighbor, 2 years ago, was the famous shooting on the day after Christmas. The 63-year-old grandmother was about 25 feet from my house. And she was shot by a white man, a drug dealer, and murdered. So I understand the point, but I what is amazing me is that you're telling me that over 6 foot black men were bowling?
Yes, they actually do enjoy those types of activities.
Well, I'm glad they do.
410-319-8888. Shamika, you're on the air.
Hi. Good evening,
welcome,
everybody. I had a couple quick comments. The first one is, I find it quite interesting that the delegate's version of getting away from the issue is making a comment about whether or not 6 foot black men actually, they do a lot more than what they get paid millions of dollars on air to do. But anyway, I was actually going to ask for some of the numbers and figures and data that you're privy to, that apparently the general public isn't privy to, that proves that there are these black mobs that are so violent and where they're attacking and what's going on with that, and like numbers and figures and not just personal anecdotes. It sounds like a lot of the concerns are based on personal anecdotes, the event and the ditching that was going on the day that you were hosting charity events, et cetera, et cetera. The second part of my comment.
Just to respond to that very quickly, I'm not raising that question. The Sun paper raised the same question and, in fact, had a lot of difficulty, as you may have read, in getting the police dispatches, which they finally did. Were able to get those.
So you have numbers?
Yeah, I do have numbers. Yeah, I have commentary and conversations with the Gold Shields, the command, and with the police on the streets. And that's my concern with the mayor. Those guys and girls have a job to do, and they're not going to say anything publicly. They got to get a pension.
Could you shed light on some of those numbers for us so that we can be as educated as you are?
Well, as I pointed out earlier, when Anthony and I were talking, and when the other gentleman called in and made the comment that he thought it was pretty safe and he was down there and all that sort of thing, there are groups. I witnessed the group. It was at least 100 folks. There are numbers roving. You will see in the dispatches the numbers that they check out, 100 here, 200 there, 300 here.
Right.
And then also the reported incidents. And it's been the thing that people keep forgetting, and this I think is an important fact,
mm-hmm.
It's been going on for over 2 years. It's not a recent event.
I actually live within walking distance of the Inner Harbor, and when I commute to work on a daily basis 5 days a week, I commute through the Inner Harbor twice a day, sometimes a third time when I'm going back out because I use public transportation. And I have witnessed what I realized people could perceive as being mobs if they were moving and walking in false expectations appearing real, i.e. fear. I've seen it, and I will be the first to admit that I have seen urban youth, i.e. black youth and white youth from working class areas in Baltimore City, who were not displaying the most decorum possible. However, I have only been privy to one incident of violence while I was walking down in Baltimore City streets, and that happened to be in Charles Village. And I've been a resident of neighborhoods in Baltimore all over the city, including Charles Village, for the past 13 years.
The day after my comments,
I asked for
the day after my comments on radio on Friday that afternoon, a youth was attacked by 20 other youth, beaten senseless, coming from the Digital Harbor High School. And there were two stabbing attacks, one on Calvert and Baltimore Street, and one on Charles and the street above Baltimore. I can't remember what the street is. All that afternoon.
Yes, and those things happen. They
well,
do happen.
We don't want them to happen.
Of course,
and we don't want them to happen that frequently.
Nobody wants them to happen, and nobody wants them to happen that frequently as you're describing them. What I'm suggesting is that I think you're painting a picture of the city of Baltimore being vastly more dangerous than it really is.
Well, as I said, Mark, you and I will have to have a professional and respectful disagreement on that one.
I mean, I would be willing any night of the week to sit in front of a live audience, fact to fact, and deal with it, because it's just not real. I mean, that's not what we're facing. We do need, look, not just the Inner Harbor, every neighborhood has to be safe.
Absolutely.
You know, and I am
including the neighborhoods in Baltimore County.
Including neighborhoods in Baltimore County and Harford County and Hagerstown, and I can name
Edgewood in Harford County is terrible.
And not just places like Edgewood. I mean, there are kids in northern Baltimore County killing each other with cars every month because they're drunk and driving.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All through the county roads. And so, I mean, there's lots of things we can deal with, but I think in a way that makes kind of less emotion and more logic.
Well, I'm dealing with logic. I'm dealing with solutions. I'm trying to bring people together to come up with ideas and to work on the problem. Those who want to join can join. Those who don't want to join can do whatever they want to do. I'm just putting it out there. I can't do it myself. Obviously, I'm one person. People say, well, you're a Baltimore County guy. Why are you concerned about what's happening in the harbor? I was born in Baltimore City. I represented the city as a legislator 100 years ago when I was 30 years old. And, you know, we have spent $4 billion in the Inner Harbor for the World Trade Center, the stadiums, the Maryland Science Center. And my folks who live in Baltimore County do visit the Inner Harbor, and I am concerned about their safety, just like I'm concerned about any person's safety.
Pat, I appreciate your being out here with us this afternoon and joining this conversation. We look forward to many more.
Thank you very much, Mark. Appreciate it.
Take care, Delegate.
Pat McDonough, Republican from District 7, and Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, Assistant Professor, American Studies, UMBC, author of the book Blackberries and Red Bones, Critical Articulations of Black Hair, Black Politics in African Communities. It's always good to have you on the air with us.
Thank you.
And congratulations on the graduation this afternoon, UMBC.
Yes, where there were several black youth mobs.
Mobs.
graduating.
Graduating mobs.
Yes,
of young
absolutely.
Black people.
Absolutely. In the downtown area at First Mariner.
You really have to watch these mobs graduating off of stages. You never know what they could do with those diplomas and the short, pointy ends of the hats that they wear.
You're trouble, Mark Steiner. You are trouble.
Thank you, Kimberly, for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Delegate, for joining us. It's been great to have you with us. It's always good to have, you know, like really a variety of voices getting into things, which we have to do here on public radio. And my dear friend who's in the studio with me, Anthony McCarthy, we'll be right back. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Rocky Anderson, former mayor of Salt Lake City, who is running to be President of the United States of America. We'll hear a conversation with him. Then we're joined by Dr. Homer Faber, Lalit Gadia, and the Reverend Wendell Phillips, the younger, obviously, who will be joining us to talk about Miriam Bascom, who passed away, but also about the power of our older civil rights leaders, what they bring to us, and what they represent in our city. Stay with us.